call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. It's about 4 minutes after 2 today on the 22nd of March. And we have present with us today Senator Meyer, Senator Costello, Senator Wilikowski, and Chairman Coghill. And my apologies for the delay. We're bound to other people's meetings, and so that took us that extra half an hour. So today we're going to bring up Senate Bill 60, which has been assigned to us, and it deals with violations on fishing, hunting issues. And so what I thought I'd do is go ahead and have the department bring it forward. And I think Mr. Chastain, are you going to be the one presenting? So if we could just have Cooper Chastain, and I got to get the rank right. What's the rank, sir?
Major.
Major. I'll remember that. I have a son-in-law who's a major in the Air Guard, so that'll help. Thank you for bringing this bill forward and introduce it, and then we'll have maybe a few questions along the way.
Good afternoon, Senator Judiciary and Senator Coghill and members. I am Major Bernard Chastain. I am the Deputy Director for the Alaska Wildlife Troopers, and today I'll be presenting to you Senate Bill 60. So what I have is I'll go over 4 points that the bill does primarily, and then I'll walk you through a quick sectional analysis, which will identify each one of the points. So primarily, this bill allows, number one, a person who receives a citation for not having their hunting or sport fishing license in actual possession, it allows us to make that a correctable citation. So if that person has purchased a license previously that is valid at the time of purchase, and they have forgotten it at home or don't have it with them in their vehicle, we can actually make that a correctable citation. That would be similar to vehicle insurance or something similar to that.
That's good.
That's one of the primary focuses of the bill. Second, it makes it unlawful for a person to obtain a sport fishing, hunting, or trapping license if the person had the rights to engage in those activities revoked or suspended in Alaska. So if your hunting or fishing license was revoked or suspended in Alaska, right now, the way that the statute is actually written, it does not include the state of Alaska. So we're adding the words this or to that statute, which will actually include the state of Alaska, and I'll explain that when I get to the sectional.
Okay, thank you.
The third thing primarily that it does is it increases restitution amounts for unlawfully taken big game animals and increases strict liability commercial fishing fines for first, second, and third offenses. And I'll go over that when I get to that section. And finally, it creates an option of charging most statutes within Title 16 as a violation or a misdemeanor, depending on the severity of the crime at the time, and it aligns penalties and standardizes them within the statutes in Title 16.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll start with Section 1, and I'll walk through the bill in order here so we can stay in order. So Section 1 amends 1605.330A to include the word permit, in addition to the license and tag, for purposes of clarifying the proper types of documentation that a person must have in their actual possession when engaging in certain activities. Under 1605.330, a person engaged in the activities listed in 1 through 5 here in the bill must have in their actual possession a license, tag, or permit to legally engage in that activity. Section 1 reorders the activities in two separate categories. Section 1 or 2 are considered sport activities, and 3, 4, and 5 are considered commercial activities. And the purpose for this reordering is contained in Section 3 of this bill. And Mr. Chair, I will, to let you know, I also have in the room with me Bruce Dale, who's the Director of Wildlife Conservation for Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And I should have on the phone Department of Law representative, so we're able to answer any questions you might have.
That is true. Aaron Peterson is on with the Department of Law in Anchorage.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 2, amend 1605.330D to make it unlawful for a person to obtain a sport fishing, hunting, or trapping license if their rights to engage in those activities is revoked or suspended. It amends 330D to make it unlawful for a person to purchase a license in this or another state if their license to hunt, fish, or trap has been revoked or suspended in this or another state. Currently, the statute directs that a person who applies for a sport fishing, hunting, or trapping license or permit or tag issued under 16330 through 430 shall sign a statement that the right to obtain or exercise the privileges granted by that license is not suspended or revoked in another state. Surprisingly, this statute does not include our own state. So this is really, in our view, a house cleaning issue to include Alaska as part of that.
Yeah, I was surprised, and I maybe they were just focused on out-of-state issues at the time, but I was equally surprised. Thank you.
Section 3 adds three subsections. The first provides that a person charged with failing to have the appropriate sport fishing, hunting, or trapping license in their actual possession may not be convicted if the person produces no later than 30 days after the issuance of the citation a license previously issued to that individual that was valid at the time of the offense. It makes it basically an official correctable citation to not have your sport fishing, hunting, or trapping license in your actual possession when you're engaging in that activity. For many years, Alaska Wildlife Troopers have given unofficial correctable citations to most people in this situation. This section will give the Alaska Wildlife Troopers the ability to cite a person for not having their sport fishing, hunting, or trapping license and given them a period of days to bring their license to any office, Department of Public Safety, and have it signed off. That is, once it's signed off, the citation is dismissed. There's no recording of that citation in court view or on the person's record. And if passed, it will be very similar to correctable citations issued for headlight requirements and proof of motor vehicle insurance and others.
So, Major, just envisioning this, a little different than car insurance, for example. If it's correctable and somebody has to go get a license in order to show a license, how is that handled?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in order for it to be correctable, the person would have had to have purchased previously a valid license for that to be valid.
So then otherwise it would be a citation and correct. The fine would stand?
That's correct.
Okay.
Looking at Section 4 allows for actual possession to include electronic form. That is having to do with the license. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game desires to have a system of electronic licensing. In situations where the hunter, fisher, or trapper decides to carry their license electronically instead of in paper format, this section will allow for that activity. The last section states that any peace officer presented with an electronic device under this subsection shall be immune from liability resulting from damage to the device. It holds that peace officers who inspect these electronic licenses in the field immune from liability if damage occurs to the device in the process of inspection. Hunting, fishing, and trapping licenses are often inspected in adverse conditions, aboard boats and seas, while hands are contaminated with fish parts or game parts. If something happens to the device in the short time the peace officer is inspecting the license, this section would hold the law enforcement officer immune from that damage. If this section is implemented, the resource users will have the ability to decide if they want to present a paper copy or electronic copy. That'll be their choice. As another point, Fish and Game is in the process of developing the electronic portion of this. They're not fully developed yet. So once that becomes something that is available, that if this passes, that will allow for that to take place.
I'm envisioning bad actors, how that might happen on both sides of the aisle, and that is something that is, he says he's got it, or she says she's got it, and for some reason or another, water damage now gets to it. Then it would be a correctable citation at that point, is the way I take it.
Mr. Chair, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking if the device is dropped into the water, whether it would be a correctable citation or not. That if they had a license valid at the time of purchase, that would be a correctable citation.
Then this is just me thinking, if there was a bad acting of enforcement officer that accidentally dropped it, wink and nod accidentally, then the liability wouldn't be there, but there would still be recourse if they said, look, it just purposely dropped it in the water. Would there be recourse at that point?
Through the chair, I would absolutely hope there would be recourse. That should be something that we'd be able to look at.
Because we're taking the liability off, but I don't think that takes the action responsibility away. And I wanted to make sure that we said that out loud. I wouldn't expect that, but human nature being what it is, we have good and bad on both sides of every aisle. So anyway, just a thought.
Certainly. Okay, Okay, moving on to Section 5. Related to Section 4, this section adds a new subsection and creates the ability to charge some offenses as violations that are currently only allowed to be charged as misdemeanors. This is important because as we move through the bill, there'll be several sections here that discuss that we have given the option, most fines are within Title 16 are Class A misdemeanors, and so we're giving the option to charge also as a violation. So in some cases, it's important that we stay with a Class A misdemeanor for serious offenses. In other cases, the offenses may be less serious and may be a violation, and those are important to charge as a violation and not as a misdemeanor. So,
and part of the discussion we've had in this committee along the way is that sometimes a violation with a fine actually has more immediate and more corrective action than you would have, say, in going through the defense process of a misdemeanor. So I think as we look at this, it looks like certainly that's something that you're working on here. Please continue. Yeah. And committee members, if there's a question as you go through it, I know Senator Wilkowski's already heard this, but...
So did you.
Well, I was in the committee that it was in, but I think I missed a good chunk of the presentation, so... Senator Costello, I guess it's all on you to understand this thing.
I just have one question about on page 4, line 24, where it talks about a person without any culpable mental state. Is that a term that's defined?
Yes, it is. In fact, why don't we go ahead and let him work our way down through there, and then we'll get to that, because he will then describe several of the violations and how he gets we get to that mental state.
Okay.
But it is a term of art, and we can always have the Department of Law chime in.
Yeah.
But, Major, why don't you, when we get to that, stop and explain that.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Move on to Section 6. Section 6 addresses strict liability commercial fishing violations. Strict liability commercial fishing violations are not criminal offenses. This statute establishes a monetary value for first, second, and third time liability commercial fishing offenses within a 10-year period. The fine amounts in this section are the maximum amounts the court could impose if the fisherman was found guilty. This section raises the strict liability commercial fishing fines from the amounts established in 1988 when this section was enacted to the same amount adjusted for inflation in 2016 dollars.
Go ahead, Major.
The fine increases will serve both as a deterrent and a tool for Alaska wildlife troopers to effectively enforce the state's most important commercial fisheries worth billions of dollars to the economy of Alaska, while also protecting the commercial fisheries resources and the overall viability of the commercial fishing industry.
For which I agree. And so just for the senators here, the strict liability is has to deal with a culpable mental state. So could you just explain what you mean when you say strict liability? There's a variation of liabilities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So culpable mental state is a state that is required to be proven in a court of law. So for instance, knowingly, intentionally, recklessly, with criminal negligence, those are culpable mental states. Strict liability is a term that is used where you are strictly liable for the offense regardless of your intent. And the best way to explain that would be if you are speeding on the highway, a law enforcement officer does not have to show that you knew that you were speeding at 75 miles an hour in a 55 zone. We just have to show that you were speeding at 75 miles an hour. The same thing would apply for most fish and game offenses. It's a culpable mental state is actually at a lower level of criminal civil negligence. And that the standard is pretty low as far as what we have to show. And a lot of the situations in statute, there are culpable mental states that are required, but when you see the term no culpable mental state or without culpable mental state, that's for a violation offense, which is a maximum of $500.
Thank you. I think that's helpful as we move through it, through, because we have quite often put knowingly in there over against with reckless disregard, and so
Right. Those
are the different variations. So please continue, Major. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Just a question on the rates. They were 369, and now you're proposing 612 and 15. I don't want to speak for anybody else, but for your third offense, I wouldn't have a problem with going 18 and keeping it 6,000 increments. Is there some reason why you made 15?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that's a good question. So one and two, the 6,000, 12,000 were actually enacted in 1988. The section three, when the 15,000 was enacted several years later by the legislature, so that reflects the several years later and the inflation regarding that as it was put in the early 90s. So that would be a policy call for your committee to decide whether you want to change that or not.
Mr. Chairman, how often does that happen where you have somebody convicted three times within a 10-year period? Is that frequent?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it's not frequent. It happens, I would guess, the third offense probably several times per year. And it typically happens in large commercial fisheries, Bristol Bay, for instance, where there's a lot of violations happening and it's folks are pushing the envelope because it's a very competitive fishery.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Moving on to Section 7, amend 1605.722 by adding a new subsection. And related to Section 6 and contained within 722, this section requires the court system to transmit notice of all convictions under this section to the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, or CFEC. Going back to Senator Meyer's question about convictions, commercial fishers are applied points similar to driver's license. And when a person is convicted of certain commercial fishing offenses, it's important that the points that are applied to those permits are sent to the agency that actually controls that. So CFEC, Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, can actually revoke administratively a fishing permit if they have too many points within a period of time. Section 8. Amends 782 and removes the penalty section from A, which cleans up the subsection and makes it clear. Basically, it aligns the penalties within Title 16, and it makes for charging of a Class A misdemeanor or a violation, and you'll see that in B of that section. Section 10 is the same thing. It relates to Section 8, and it adds two new subsections that establish the penalties as a Class A misdemeanor for a criminal offense and provides for the additional option of charging a person with a violation when appropriate. Section 11 has to do with same-day airborne hunting, and it removes a section in Section 11, the specific fines and penalties. So you'll see that $5,000 or imprisonment for not more than 1 year or both has been removed. And it's been standardized to a Class A misdemeanor punishable under AS 1255.
But it still allows the forfeiture.
It does.
Pretty significant, yeah.
Sure. Section 12. Section 12 is a statute that deals with prohibition of hunting adjacent to highway between the Yukon River and the Arctic Ocean. And it amends and adds that penalties for a violation of this section is a Class A misdemeanor punishable as provided in 1255. Cleans that section up. Section 13 adds a new subsection that provides the additional option of charging a person with a violation when appropriate. And you'll see a pattern here that what these are doing is it's aligning penalties within the statutes, but it's also providing another avenue for charging it as a violation. So we're getting rid of the individual penalties, making them all Class A misdemeanors, and then applying that you can also charge them as a violation. Section 17, under penalty for violations, it's amended to provide consistency in the penalties and provides an exemption for a new subsection under C, which we'll talk about here in a second. I'm sorry, that was Section 17. So Section 17, this subsection provides for restitution amounts that the court may impose for illegally taken big game animals in Alaska. It increases the restitution amounts by at least 50% that a person convicted of unlawfully taking a big game may have to pay if the state judge chooses to implement restitution. Alaska's big game belongs to all of us collectively. When an animal is unlawfully taken, it defrauds the state of the value of that animal to the citizens. The value varies greatly depending on the species of animal, the location of the take, the social value of the animal, the economic value, and the food source value to the people of the state. These restitution values may be imposed by the court if the case warrants applying restitution. In most cases, it does not make the state whole for the loss of the animal, but it helps pay the state back for the illegal take. These restitution amounts were enacted in 1984 and have gone untouched since then. The original bill submitted in the 2016 legislature increased restitution amounts by 50% from the base amounts in statute. Some of these amounts were changed in committees as the bill moved through the legislature last session. This version of the bill reflects the changes that were made in those committees. Some animals, like moose, for instance, went up in total restitution amount by 150%. So you'll see on your list, some of them are more than 50%. That we started out with 50% as the standard for inflation from 1984 to 2016 dollars. And some of the House committees, as it moved through, those were changed last year to be increased.
So just out of curiosity, on this restitution penalty, is that money that we can add, say, match for Pittman-Robertson money or anything like that? Is there any way that we can get value from that for, say, habitat improvement?
Through the chair, I think what I'd like to do is ask the Department of Law to comment on that as far as where those penalties go. Most of them go into the general fund, but there are some special privileges that we have.
We'll get the Department of Law, because I wanted to run through the culpable mental state issues real quickly for those of us who have to be continually reminded. But on that particular issue, it'll also be what that penalty actually can be used for. Thank you.
One important point on restitution is that these are not fine amounts. So in addition to a person being convicted and the judge deciding what the fine might be within that penalty, these are additional restitution amounts that can be applied for the illegal take of that animal. And these are maximum amounts. Sometimes judges decide not to implement the whole amount. They decide to implement a portion of it. And it just depends on the situation. And not all the time. In fact, it's not really common that these are given out by judges. But when they do, it's because it was a pretty egregious case. Okay. Section 18 was added relating to subsection B. And it establishes that a defendant may not be ordered to pay restitution to the state under this section if, and you'll see under C there, this actually came from your office last year, Mr. Chair, and it talks about that a person who voluntarily and immediately reported taking to the department, that they've taken an animal illegally and surrenders to the department all salvaged portions of the animal, including the horns, antlers, hide, and skull as applicable, cannot be charged restitution by the court. So we term this as self-turn-in. So someone who takes an animal illegally that may have thought it was legal at the time that they were taking it, the animal is determined to not be legal, and they then pick up the phone and notify us that they've made a mistake. They bring all the meat, the antlers, the hide, everything out of the field. Mm-hmm. They turn themselves in. They are cited. They receive a violation offense, and they do not lose anything like privileges, hunting privileges, equipment, anything else. They basically get a ticket, and the animal goes to the state because it was illegally taken. And this, if this passes, what this will prohibit is a court from imposing restitution in those cases.
And that was the balance, by the way, for the committee. That was a balance on having people hunting and scofflaw by purposely killing something, and for the joy of killing and then turning themselves in, they would still lose the tag, the privilege of that particular hunt. And I think in the citation, which at that point I think is appropriate to have that balance, because you don't want people out there scamming the system on that account either. But you don't want real honest mistakes to be so egregiously managed. So that was kind of my discussion on it. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, moving to Section 19, it adds a new definition. The paragraph defines electronic form, and it means a display of images on an electronic device such as a mobile, telephone, tablet, or computer. And Section 19 here, as I explained earlier, the Fish and Game implements the electronic licensing format, and portion of that, that will allow for electronic licensing to be displayed.
So, Major, we just had a bill go through here dealing with hemp and growing hemp. and licensing and having it in electronic form. And what we said in that particular law was that if they show that proof on a electronic format, that doesn't give the right to inspect the rest of the information on that device. Is that something that is needed here, or is that something that you would normally cover under policies? It's just a question that comes up in mind.
Through the chair, so I think it's generally the accepted, at least in my mind, it's generally accepted that we only have permission to look at that license itself. We don't have permission to search a phone or go farther into an electronic device. That's not something that would be considered a search if we actually went through and started looking at other things, which is not prohibited unless we have a search warrant.
Okay. It's just a question that comes up, and since we dealt with it in that, it was just a safeguard that they felt important to have, and it's probably something that we'll talk about. Okay. Thank you.
I'm actually going to take sections 20 through 25 all together, and these sections do the same thing. They establish Class A misdemeanors, they establish that violations can be charged, and they clean up penalties within those sections altogether. Section 26, penalty for violations under 1610.120 and 1610.125 removes the penalties associated with unclassified misdemeanor and replaces it with Class A misdemeanor provided under 1255. Actually, I should have included 26 and 27 as well. Section 28 amends the uncodified law of Alaska to make it clear that it applies to offenses that occur on or after the effect of this date. And Section 29 provides for effective date of July 1st, 2017. And, Mr. Chair, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Questions at this point for the major? Do you want to get the Department of Law up here to answer those two questions? Thank you, Major. Why don't we get the Department of Law? Do we have somebody from the Department of Law here? Oh, I'm sorry. We have Aaron Peterson online. I'm sorry, Aaron. We'll get right to you. So, Aaron, there was two questions, and one of them is just a rundown on the culpable mental state, since that once again, it's almost in every bill we deal with here, but just a simple, quick rundown of the different mental states, so that we understand from strict liability to the worst cases.
Sure, and this is Aaron Peterson for the record. Mr. Chair, the mental states in criminal law in Alaska range from the very top being intentional down to knowingly, recklessly, to criminal negligence. And then in Fish and Game, there's actually something a little different known as modified civil negligence. And that's a standard that was set out by the Alaska court in State v. Rice. And what that essentially said is if the person knew or should have known that what they were doing was a violation, that was the culpable mental state for a Fish and Game offense. The court reasoning for that is probably pretty obvious. It said that a person couldn't say, I didn't know that the season for sheep was closed, and that would not be a defense. Merely the state would have to show that the person should have known, of course, as opposed to saying they knew, right? If knowingly was a mental state, then the state would have to prove, if somebody took a sublegal sheep, that they knew the sheep was sublegal, which would almost be impossible because somebody wouldn't shoot a sublegal sheep knowing that it's sublegal if, you know, depending on the circumstances, we would generally assert that. As far as intent goes, that would be like, you know, murder in the first degree. You are intending to do that which you're doing, right? Or, and then, of course, you can ascribe any of those to the actions, say, in Title 16. Generally, what we have here, in this bill, there are a couple of references to criminal negligence. Anywhere in Title 16 or the regulations adopted under Title 16, which is the 5AAC, the court has said, as I already stated, that the culpable mental state for a misdemeanor charge is modified civil negligence.
So Aaron, that's a we're tying it to Title 12, but under Title 16, without the specific description, if there's a violation that doesn't have a specific mental state tied to it, what's the default? Is it strict liability?
Well, so there are a range of offenses that are covered under 1605-925A, which says a person who violates AS 1605-920 and a few others, or regulations adopted under this, could be a Class A misdemeanor. As you notice, I didn't mention a mental state, and so in that situation, the court has said in Rice, and again in another case called Orr-Hickey v. State, that the mental state would be modified civil negligence, as I said, knew or should have known. You'll also find other places in Title 16 where other ranges of offenses are criminalized. For example, in 1605-430, there's another range of offenses, for example, 1605-330 through 1605-420. It says somebody that violates that range of offenses is guilty of a misdemeanor. And again, no mental state, therefore, to charge that as a misdemeanor, the mental state is knew or should have known.
And Aaron, that's because they would have to know the hunting area and have had the hunting regulations at least presented to them, right?
So it would, the proof necessary would be that they should have known because the hunting regulations are available. I mean, that would be part of the proof to make that case. It would not be, I mean, certainly the hunting regulations are available virtually everywhere. You can get a hunting license, they're available online. They are, you know, ubiquitous at anywhere that sporting goods are sold. They're very hard, it's very hard to not be able to find. Obviously, there are rural places where it might be more difficult, but, you know, we're talking sort of in general terms. What needs to be shown is that they should have known that this, the animal is sublegal. They should have known that this season was closed. And as I pointed out previously, you know, the court came to that conclusion in part because of the difficulties with proving that somebody was in fact aware of, you know, a certain thing or intended a certain result that might make prosecuting many what we would consider more severe fish and game offenses very difficult, if not impossible.
Thank you. And then the other question that came up was on the restitution charges, how those monies may have different avenues of use, or are they just strictly to go into general fund? Do you know the answer to that?
Yes, I can tell you that they do go into the general fund. Restitution goes into the general fund usually. There are certain times when restitution goes into the fish and game fund, criminal fine sub fund, and that is for primarily for fisheries. So the criminal fine sub fund was set up to, when restitution is due for the damage to a resource. And this is why it's generally applied in fisheries, because when a resource is damaged, you're talking about a creek rotting or something like that, where that happens for many years, salmon will eventually stop returning. Eventually, there isn't enough stock to keep spawning and having new salmon go out and come back. So when there's damage to the resource, then those restitution funds can go to the criminal fine sub fund, which are used then for the protection of that resource. And there are other fish and game funds that don't pertain to the criminal proceedings that have sort of similar fish and game protection requirements, and the use of those monies have certain requirements on them. But in criminal cases with forfeiture, generally, especially when we're talking about big game animals, those go to the general fund.
Okay, thank you very much. Other questions at this point? tell you what I've been working on as a chairman, and I'll bring it before you. We found that they had taken some of the Class A misdemeanors and aligned them up, and with the work that we did on Senate Bill 91 and some of the cleanup we're doing, there we found some other places that within this code could be changed as well. And so I'd like to bring those in. It's a little broader approach than what they did, but it's similar all the way through. So it's kind of cleaning up some of our code to make them similar across the code. That's probably the less contentious issue. I have two that are going to be a little more tense. One of them deals with a licensing issue on taxidermy, which I don't think will be that intense. The other one is taking of game that is trophy, and I found out that those who come up in from out of state and do guided tours and take trophy animals, they can actually take them out and sell them. If you do it in state, you can't. And I want to know what the genesis of that, what the enforcement of it is, what the reasons for it were, and if we can give some residents a little local benefit, or if that tips open a can of worms that we can't figure out. So I wanted to bring that up for the committee. But I don't have the language totally set up. And then there's the issue that one of my staff members brought up an issue on kinship, and I can't even describe the whole issue right now, so I have to do a little bit of schooling on it myself. So that brings the bill as it is before us, and this is your chance to ask them any question you wanted to ask them. Otherwise, I'm going to shut this meeting down. You guys are too easy. We started late. We're going to end early. This is I'm starting a bad reputation around here. So with that, what we're going to do is hold the bill over. I got a CS drafted with those very issues that I was talking about. The department can get them today. So my intention is not to hold the bill on a contentious issue. If we have the discussion and it looks like it won't go smoothly this year, I'll lay it aside so this bill can move on. It goes on up to finance. And I'd like to get them with this thing up to finance as soon as I can. So, Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, so if we have amendment, would you entertain that?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
Yep. And I think as we go through it, my intention is to bring this up next week. And so I work on those amendments, see my staff, Jordan, and check it out with the department. At least that gives them a heads up. And I've tried to do that. I can tell you I've livened their discussion a little bit. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, maybe
sure.
Bring it up now. I mentioned the fine structure, mm-hmm. and to me, if someone's in violation a third time, then it should be a higher than the $15,000 that you have. So I don't know if you are set on that number, or I think you said it's a policy call, so I'm assuming you'll go with whatever the committee decides.
It was based on an inflationary number and the time and history was put in. But the way it looks, certainly it would be an $18,000 fine if we followed suit with just doubling everything.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you double it, it'd be 24. Because you go 6, 12, 20, then it'd be 24.
Well, from 9 is what I was thinking.
Okay. You're soft, Mr. Chairman.
We have a $3 billion deficit, Mr. Chair.
Well, it is true that both with the licensing issues that we dealt with last year and the fine issues, we're probably very permissive in Alaska. But it's also true, and I've heard it said many times, that if you're going to hunt in Alaska, you have to have a lawyer and a GPS. And I think the police have to deal with the same complexity. So my heart goes out to them. We've created quite a system here. But I think this cleans it up a little bit. It helps those who are enforcing it have a better methodology. So thank you very much for bringing the bill before us and explaining it to us. Obviously, you've satisfied many of the questions, and so we'll bring the CS before, and then you'll have plenty of time to look at it so you can comment, and then we'll move on from there. All right? Any other further questions? No further questions? Then we'll adjourn, and we will adjourn till Monday. All right? All right, we'll adjourn.